tuned in to Naturopathic Earth Radio with certified health consultant and former obese child, A. Gregory Luna, where you get the latest on clean living, natural remedies, effective weight loss tips, and sound naturopathic principles from experts and biohackers from around the world and Gregory himself. Don't be a slave to Big Pharma. Break free of the shackles of Big Food and start your journey now to a long, vibrant, purposeful life. Become a citizen of Naturopathic Earth.
Hello, everyone, and this is A. Gregory Luna. Of course, you can call me Gregory. Welcome back to another episode of Naturopathic Earth Radio. Before we begin our second part of the interview with Dr. Lawrence Cohen, I have some announcements we need to make. I want to mention that Amanda S. was the winner of the third essential oil raffle. So Kate is going to make Amanda an essential oil blend. So congratulations to her. For all you other people who are subscribers, you're going to be put back into the pool. And we will do another essential oil raffle probably in about 3 weeks. We like to do one every month or so. Also, before we begin with the interview, I do want to mention that please go and listen and review our two other sister podcasts of the Naturopathic Earth family. We have Kate's Apothecary, which is a beginner's guide to aromatherapy and herbs. Check that out on Apple Podcasts, formerly known as iTunes. And then we have Confessions of an Obese Child, which is my journey into the highs and lows of growing up overweight. It's a 26-episode series. So check that out on iTunes, too, and forward that to anybody who might have grown up overweight. That'd be great. If you like what Kate and I are doing on our Mom, Pa website and podcast, just post a review. Even if a tenth of the persons who are listening to this podcast would post a review, which would only take about a minute, it would really help what we're doing here just to spread the news. We're just two teachers with a lot of kids combined, just trying to get some news out on aromatherapy and toxins in the food and how to eat well. So we would really appreciate that. Today is Labor Day 2017, so I thought what better way to celebrate Labor Day than to work and to do a little podcast. So in our second part of our interview with Dr. Cohen, we're going to talk about kind of the differing views that we have of medicine. You'll see this is a continuation of the episode one, the first part of the episode where we talked about complementary medicine, and Dr. Cohen elaborated on that. And this part of the interview, it's more of just kind of the views that we have. They're slightly differing. I tend to have that view that the whole entire system's corrupt. And Dr. Cohen tends to have a more optimistic view of the business. And then we talk about where do we see medicine in 20 years? Is it going to be incorporating more of the nutritional science and the botanical science? And are we going to see more of a true complementary doctor that's being cranked out by the medical schools? Or in 20 years, are we just going to still have the typical allopathic doctor who is evidence-based and kind of sees everything through the prism of big pharma prescription drugs? So we cover that. And then later on, we cover the get-to-know-you questions, which are about alcohol, travel, and music. So please listen to that. Enjoy the interview. I just wonder, what's stopping today from the traditional Western medical doctor from being a complementary doctor like you? Is it Big Pharma is funding medical school to so much to the extent where they don't want to bring in botanical science?
So, wait.
Clinical and all that?
I'm going to tell you.
Why can't they do that? Why can't we have this merge?
Wait. I'm going to give you an example. I know. It's an important question. It's a real question, and I want to get to it. But I want to give you a little example of what the level is we're talking about here. In Orthodox Judaism, as in many other and really fundamental Christianity, the Old Testament is considered absolutely true. I'm not here to discuss that point. It's important just to know that that's what their belief structure is. And that God spoke from Mount Sinai. God gave the Ten Commandments. I mean, there's no question about it. Like it says it happened there, that's how it happened. And many of the Orthodox community here in town, at least of my group, they'll go for homeopathy. Homeopathy's big in some of the Hasidic communities.
Really?
And vitamins. That's quite interesting, actually. Not so much in the non-Hasidic, but nonetheless. So one of them was saying, why can't the doctors take on homeopathy? What's the problem? So this is what I said to him. I said, so, you know, you believe God spoke on Mount Sinai, right? Yeah. So I said, what if it came to be that all the rabbis and everybody said, we found Mount Sinai. And everybody assembles helicopters, people climbing up. They get to the top, and there are these 20-story high, gigantic speaker-like things that are like thousands of years old, with huge, monstrous cables going to some kind of energy source, with a giant parabolic mirror aimed at the stars. I said, would you believe that? Would you still hold your belief that God spoke at Mount Sinai? He said, of course. We're not just talking about, this is the fabric of a belief system. And that just doesn't go away. And if we don't, there's economic issues too, but that's less really, except for a few.
So you don't ascribe to the belief that the big pharmaceutical companies are essentially pure evil in that. They want to keep everybody in like a state of some sort of chronic disease, because if you're healthy, you're dead. They can't profit off you. They got to keep us in this somewhat state of chronic disease.
What I want to say is, I can't.
That's too cynical.
I can't. Well, I don't choose to remain that cynical. Are there people who are the bean counters who may have that view? I'm sure. I would not dispute that. Or the pharmaceutical industry, that's where they start? No. They're looking to help people. They're looking to help get to it. They are. But sadly, human beings, you know, after the second, if you're a guy who starts a company and you build it, you care about the company. You care about the people who are there. Your children, they come in, they might be the same as you, but the grandchildren, they just want the money. They don't have any connection to the spirit that developed this thing. And that's what happens with all organizations, the generational things. People just lose sight of it all, for all the reasons that we succumb to our evils inside of our own selves. It's nothing new. It's just people running an organization. It's kind of what happens. But no, I don't believe that. Every doctor, most, are there bad doctors? Of course. I get the bulletin every month from the state medical board of some doctor who's bilking people for whatever, you know what I mean? It happens. What do we expect, perfection? I don't. It's taken me a long time. I'm 68, and I can tell you I'm just now willing to believe the truth about humanity.
Well, going back to the Hasidic Jew example, so what's stopping the AMA or whoever decides the curriculum at med schools, because I honestly don't know who decides it, from implementing more of these Eastern medicine practices?
They have not been shown to be reproducibly valid.
See, I guess I'm the cynic because part of me thinks that they don't want to teach that because they can't profit off of you.
I know, and you know, and I hear you.
Herbs,
and I just want to suggest to you that you really examine your need to feel so cynical about it, because the truth of the matter is, these are very good people. I've been around them; they care. You go to medical school; those people are trying to do good.
Well, I don't think they're like nefarious scheme makers.
They're not. But they're. But
no, want to kill people.
No. But they're just. There's just not that in there. Are there some dorks who want to? Listen, of course, there's always a percentage of souls who are really distorted. But you just can't go into medicine and research and not have a desire to serve.
I think there are altruistic. I think everybody goes to med school. Probably, you know, a lot of them are altruistic. They want to help people. They want to make money because that's, you know.
That is what it is.
There's nothing wrong with that. But I'm talking about the powers that be.
Which powers? What is this dark power you're talking about? What powers? You think it's organized somehow? Oh, yeah. We'll get together. It's not like that. Are there people who do? I would never dispute that. But it's not like once we let you in the door, we tell you what the real story is. We got this thing going.
So you think that the FDA, the USDA actually have our best interests at heart? The higher level people, the CDC, for example?
Yeah, absolutely, I think they do. You know, they've been politicized, which is, those people don't have it. They're not out for us, sadly. But no, the organizations themselves are founded on, absolutely. I mean, I'm thankful for the FDA. My God. Can you imagine? Look what happened to those people who got those shots in their spine. They got meningitis because those people weren't having good care at that facility. How many things? The adulterations. It's not, the FDA protects us.
I agree to a certain extent that they're a watchdog agency. Just that you see a lot of issues where the FDA approves certain toxic chemicals that are not good.
What I want to say to you is all organizations are made of people. Therefore, the weaknesses of people get played out in those structures. So it's up to us as individuals and as a nation to both empower them to do right and pay attention to what they're doing. So that when they start going over the edge, we go, you guys got lost. Let's pull this back a bit. So sure, EPA, FDA, thank God. You want to know what's like having that? Go to Somalia.
Well,
go to China. You want to know about the EPA? You go to China, buddy, and you just figure out what happens there. Thank God.
Well, we don't want anarchy like you were talking about in the late 19th
century.
No,
I'm just talking about just disempower it. Don't give enough money to do its job, which is what's trying to happen right now. So I'm just trying to counterbalance this stuff. Yes, in every group, I've been in religious groups, organizations with good heart. There are people who get in there and have their own agenda. I don't care what the group is, whether it's a church or a school or a board or somebody's wants to cut their other stuff they want it for. Everybody's got to go, that's enough. Let's stop that right now. But you have to be willing to do that.
Well, I would love to talk about vaccines with you because, you know, a lot of the anti-vaxxers, you know, despise the CDC.
Yeah, I'm sorry about that. I think that...
you can't sue the doctor. You can't sue the pharmaceutical
company. Those are separate
company.
Issues, which I don't agree with. And that's wrong. But if you're going to tell doctors they have to do it, and then you make them vulnerable for what they have to do, I don't know. I can see why they protected them. But it's not about the doctors. It's about the system and how they feel about it. And there's no question, at least depending on your point of view, that tetanus, if we didn't have tetanus shots, things would be different. If we didn't have diphtheria, things would be different.
Well, polio vaccine, right?
Well, polio is an interesting story, actually. Some people, when I was really into this, my kids were small. You know, there's some question of industrialization. And then that polio had a separate life course. And that we happened to plug in at the time that it naturally regressed. I don't necessarily believe that, by the way. But that was one thing.
But that belief is that the vaccine, essentially. Well, because I've heard like the vaccines, the Salk and Sabin vaccines had monkey virus in it. And that's one of the reasons.
But wait.
It was adulterated. But.
Well, there's many. Listen, do we need to learn more and do it better? Yes. Did vaccines save an entire segment of many from dying? Yes.
Yes.
Did it cause some other problems? Well, when you do 37 at once, I reckon there's going to be some problems. You know what I mean? What kind of immune system has been created for that kind of
assault? Okay, but when you bring that up to them, I mean, they apparently don't think that that's an extremely vigorous vaccine
right.
schedule.
Because, you know, people get on the grind, on the treadmill, and, you know, they're feeling assaulted, and they have to protect it. And so people who feel attacked, they just, you know, they circle the wagons and take on a stronger stance. It was an interesting discussion. I like to bring it to modern times because I think people can kind of relate to what's happening right now a little bit, maybe more concretely. So this guy was talking about the neo-Nazis, and they were interviewing a guy who was a neo-Nazi, and he was in his late teens and early 20s, and he left. He saw it for what it was and left. And so they asked him, so what do we do? And he says, well, first you have to give them love and understanding. Show them what it's like to be a good human being. Because I was filled with myths about what people were, but when I really got to know them and they were good to me, I realized that was crap. He said, you can't ask people to change when you're punching them in the face. But you can help them to open up when you show them the good. And I think that's my approach. I think that if we make positive assumptions about people, and most people are good people, all of them. Even a gorilla will save a little boy. Then we provide an opportunity for growth. But if we go out there and say, you dorks, you just act, well, what opportunity is that to have a real discussion? My experience is when I talk to people who have a different political view from you, we talk about healthcare and stuff, and I present them with what I've learned and how I think about it and the nature of the models that I use. Almost one-on-one, if they're reasonable. I mean, there's unreasonable people on both ends. You just gotta, those people you can't do anything with and forget them. Like the naturopath said, what am I gonna go to them for? You just can't. You're not gonna change them. It's not gonna happen. I don't care what. It's like an abused woman. If I just said this. No.
Yeah, right. If I didn't say this to him,
nothing was gonna change that person. Right. I don't care what it was. We have to understand that's who they are. Forget it. We have to protect the big middle from those people. So it's up to us to join together. So I think that when we approach these subjects, we should be thinking about, these are good people. Let's ask them to look at stuff. Ask them, how do you think about things? Talk about philosophical perspectives. Talk about biology. The immune system stuff's remarkable. I've been getting on to the differentiation of natural therapy. So when I opened up my clinic in 1988 and before that, there weren't any real names that was sort of holistic medicine, which is what used for everything. There was alternative medicine. People didn't like the word alternative because it was like in opposition to regular medicine. So in England, this group called it complementary medicine. This was kind of the term that was really big in the mid-late 80s. And that's why I named my clinic Center for Complementary Medicine.
Because I think to the common man, you know, functional medicine, integrative medicine, complementary, it's like, are they all the same? Are they different?
I'm going to help you with that.
It's confusing.
So complementary, it is. So complementary medicine was basically saying it all complements each other. Everything's fair game. It's all useful. Weil came along. He just didn't like complementary, the word complementary. He liked the word integrative. So he took the same stuff and said, we're going to call it integrative medicine, right? And I know their course to some extent. It's a great job. They got like, I don't know, a few thousand graduates now. It's quite remarkable. And they kind of learn all these different therapies, and they have their magazine. I mean, they have research stuff called integrative medicine. Another group, Jeffrey Bland, he stayed with Linus Pauling, and he began to look at nutrition and biology more closely, and how do we really see the whole system from a biological perspective and how it functions. And I started bringing science into that, and they developed. It's quite remarkable. I mean, I've been going for a lot of years. I've watched them evolve, actually. So they said, let's look at the system as a functioning whole. They've more focused on what's known biology, known approaches to that biology using nutrition and certain nutrients and lifestyle stuff, and integrating the whole sequence, the timeline, understand things that I've been doing as a homeopath for 35 years. But they began to put it in. They did not do well integrating in energy stuff and, you know, other things for lots of reasons, and not worth going into. So they have formed this Institute of Functional Medicine, and they're looking at it as a whole, as a functioning integrated unit, but mostly based upon what we know from science and the science of nutrition and lifestyle. They're not, they appreciate acupuncture, they appreciate all these other things, but it's not part of their core curriculum, you might say. Integrative medicine, it's more eclectic in that regard. What I have been looking at, and what I'm actually going to be lecturing at a course recently, is that, and hopefully we'll write a book about it, is that it's still not integrated. And if somebody comes to you, how do you see them to where you can say, what you need is acupuncture? I think based on what you told me, we need to do this. How does that all fit together? So you can pick where you're moving and where, you know, the puzzle pieces. And how do you pick which puzzle piece when? And how do you enhance this and lower that and get that? And what's the long line that connects true healing? And what is healing and how we understand that? And that's just 37 years of taking in-depth stories. I mean, I once calculated since 1980, I've probably done 6,000 to 7,000 hour and a half interviews with people in depth. Hmm. It's just, you know, after doing that, even me, who's not particularly brilliant one way or the other, I mean, I have a gift, but I'm not, you know, it just whacks you on the head after a while. And you see, somebody comes and starts talking to me, I know their story. And I know where to go with that story. And I present a situation where it's safe for people to talk. And I'm open to the mind. And it's on my thing that I'm open to the psychological stuff. And people see I had a little psychiatric training. And so a new patient came in just the other day. And he said, his opening lines were, I saw you did the psychological stuff. Well, right away I knew where we were going. He had some other needs. He wanted to do chelation therapy. He had some heart disease. There were other issues. But the game, I knew right from the beginning. And he said, I give you permission. So I just went in. And we rediscussed it all and saw what the stuff was. And it's a wonderful experience for me to participate with people in that regard. I mean, we get into a space. And we talked about learning and his learning and his kids, what was going on with his kids, how that learning goes. And if he does this, it helps change him. But he's part of a system, and they can't change until he changes. And so we, when we see ourselves as part of the whole, then you get to understand the whole perspective of the only thing you can change is you. Because when you change, all the connected energies to you have to adjust to your change, whether it's conscious or unconscious. And there is no distance that separates the energetic connection. None. I have tested this. For people, somebody's a few thousand miles away, and I feel them. And I call them and say, what's up? I was just thinking about you. Repeatedly. This is not something that I know. It's true. We can do an EKG and put the electrodes out in space 6 feet away from you with a properly sensitive machine. And I can pick up your EKG 6 feet away.
Really?
So that as you and I sit here 4 feet away, that means our heart fields are interfacing right now. How much we allow that to happen, how much we connect with that, our fields are together. They're affecting each of us. To where I get with my heart and you get with your heart, we may find that dance place. Right? For dancing is making love. All that stuff is that connection at an energetic level, psychic energetic level. There's a people who presented this course at one of the early functional medicine things about the standing electrical fields around the earth. And they've been putting these sensors in. And they're monitoring. And on 9/11, the whole earth created one giant uniform wave right before, at the peak of it, and after. And then went back to its other separate rhythms. What's happening in other parts of the world are affecting you. It's the notion of the butterfly effect, right? Some butterfly flaps its wings in Argentina, and, you know, somebody in Nova Scotia has an epiphany or something like that. It's all one.
See, I'm open to all those, all that thought process and all that thinking. I'm just thinking of the common man. I mean, I think that
you're a common man.
But at least I know some of this stuff. I know like the tip of the iceberg. But again, the common man, functional medicine, integrative medicine, to them, this is still.
What can we do?
You're in the minority. The majority, the typical American, does not know any of this. So how do we get them to know that?
By doing this stuff.
Okay, so like, there. Do you think in 40 years, because, you know, most of the doctors that a typical person encounters is going to be the traditional Western doctor. You think in 40 years the curriculum is going to be different, where they're going to be taught in medical school homeopathy and botanical science?
I can't say. And why can't I say? And I'm sorry to bring it to modern times, but I was in the era of civil rights. I thought that humanity had made the turn. I really did. I get upset. It just brings me to tears. What's going on right now? This regression to dinosaur thinking. And I thought, oh, we bit it. I would never have predicted. I knew it was possible. I feared it. Always. Because I'm Jewish and Holocaust is never
outside. It's just wired in you.
It's just part of our fabric. You know what I mean? It's like we're always on our guard for that crap. And lo and behold, right? And this weekend, they're doing it again. Now, whether it will take hold or whatever, that's a whole different story. I'm not trying to promote that. But my point is, it just depends. You know, the system may feel threatened enough to where it mounts an attack and makes it go underground again. They're already trying to take away IVs. They're trying to take away homeopathy. And that's pharma. You want to get my butt on pharma? That is where pharma is the devil. Maybe there's some people who want to keep us ill. I can't say. But they definitely want to restrict our access to anything that they don't control.
Well, I mean,
that is the evil of big pharma.
Okay, but doesn't that undermine your argument that there's no such thing as bad people and all these entities are good and they're benevolent?
Wait. Out for a while. Well, you're putting words. I say their inceptions were good. I think they do good things. But as I said, human beings take over. The bean counters take over. So it has been transformed, and we have to not let that happen. Evil rises. It's not going to stop rising. It's part of who we are. What's every movie really about if it's not about romance? What's it about? I don't care if it's science fiction or horror. What's it always about?
Evil.
Good versus evil. Huh. Always. Because that is the core issue of our souls.
Right.
I don't care what it is. I don't care if it's Guardians of the Galaxy 2. It's good over evil.
Well, like with indie licensing, do you think that the AMA is against it there, and any resistance they're getting is because they're worried about them cutting in, the indies cutting into their money, or they worried about because indies are not legit doctors,
yeah,
people are going to die,
yeah,
do it for the children.
Everybody's got their stuff. in the 90s, when I used to go to Austin and had a practice up there, and I was part-time. I was getting still doing ER, and had my practice here, trying to earn money, kids, you know, all that. And it just so happened that there was a movement in the state legislature to create an amendment so that alternative medicine would be okay. I'm not going to go into details of this. I even went up and testified before. Everything's divinely provided. It's very interesting when you participate in life like that. I ended up talking in front of the public health committee, and had done some research and did some things. But the state medical board wasn't about to let them to lose that control. So one of the executive director, not the director, medical director, but the executive director, I was in Austin. He wanted me to come testify before the board. He got me and another guy who was a big international well-known herbalist in Austin, who I also knew. In those days, it wasn't such a big community. There were a few of us who were the core beginners, you know what I mean? So he and I are there. And it just so happened at that time, the head of the medical board in Texas was the chairman of the quackery committee of the National Organization of State Medical Boards. Luckily, or thankfully, one of the guys on the board was one of the family docs at the hospital. I was an ER doc. So I talked to him and I said, listen, I want your help. I'm going to go up there. I need to have somebody that I feel like I've got a friend out there in this thing. Worked out fine. But it was interesting. So here's some of the things that they was going around. There were people on that board who had agendas against chelation. They, you know, chelation was like, that's crap. That's not okay. And we want to get them. That's why I didn't do chelation until the last 10 years. I knew what the state board was about. Oh, there were people in Austin doing it at that time. I knew.
But do they feel that it's really crap? Or are they just hiding behind
No,
that?
They feel it's crap. And it's quackery, and it's taking people's money. It's bullshit. I mean, that's how they feel. That's all. I mean, it's straightforward. There were other guys who said, maybe we should do this. So anyway, you could tell by their questions of us. I knew exactly. You could tell people's questions tell you where they're coming from, right? So one guy said, well, maybe if we're going to put this thing in, should it be an issue that if somebody doesn't recommend alternative therapies, that they're held as an issue to the board? I looked at him and I said, look, you've trained people to be against this stuff. And now you expect them overnight to embrace it so that you want to penalize them for not embracing it? Get a grip. You know, come on. But human minds don't change that quickly. It takes generations to change. Generations to change. Mm. And so, anyway, so that was the board. And that was 1990s. Now I think it's pretty, I don't worry about chelation. None of us worry about it anymore, really, in the state. I mean, they're more worried about people giving too many narcotics or having sex with their patients or, you know, that kind of stuff than they are. Or, you know, your ethics, you haven't taken your ethics courses or something or whatever. They're not going after that stuff anymore. I see who they prosecute. I see who they go after. They're not going after people who do alternative medicine. Unless they're making false claims or false advertising or whatever. There's no agenda to come get us. I feel perfectly safe.
But you would like to see more doctors being cranked out of medical school to be more into your model instead of their
model.
I would
like them to be educated so that they can begin to take a look and at least allow for the possibility that something else could be helpful in addition to what they're doing. I gave a little talk to the pain management group out of the University Medical Center. And I talked about pain management, talked about different aspects of it, nutrition, homeopathy, that sort of stuff. Are they going to integrate it? No.
They just nodded their head. Like, that's interesting.
No.
That's interesting.
Some of them were interested. Some had agendas about supplements, you know, what they were. Are they good? Are they bad? But you're talking to somebody who's so grand. And this is my world for 37 years. Like, I don't know anything else almost anymore. And I said, no, let's talk about it. So there's an interest. There is an interest in the newer doctors. You know, look at marijuana research. They won't even let people have marijuana because they don't want to do research with it because that might change things. There are people who are afraid. Fear is the mind killer. If you've read Dune, you can know what that comes from. Fear is the mind killer. And, but it's not just them, it's everybody. I'm sure that if you and I spoke, I would find your walls. Places you're afraid to go if I began to present certain ideas to you that will, you know, what do you mean? I mean, I can't. No matter how, I have mine, and I've been weird for decades.
You know? And we all have confirmation bias. I mean, we all want to pigeonhole and believe what we want to believe.
Because it gives us security.
Right, right.
It makes the world okay.
It makes us feel better about ourselves.
Exactly. Well, just in the world, we're safe. There's order. Ah, nothing's more anxiety provoking than chaos. Or, I don't know.
And that's why you can see people who believe in like in the powers that be control everything, or there's a grand conspiracy, or the Illuminati, because it makes you feel better to know that there's a grand foreboding evil.
Why does that make you feel better? I want to understand.
Because I think some people don't like the randomness of the world, just it being just chaotic happenstance that occurs. So if it's easier to believe that there is just a power at play and that we are kind of hopeless to and powerless against it, and we just, okay. Right.
I hear you, and that's interesting. I've never asked someone who kind of have has persisted in that view a little bit longer than others. But I do believe that it's also an issue of putting external what's internal. If we think that there's something out there that's getting us, rather than looking inside of us and asking us, what are we believing? What are we doing? That's what we do. How many of us are willing to look within and say, well, that's interesting. I wonder why I think that. Well, look at my emotions. What's that about?
Well, I think a lot of the things that we think or fashion that we adhere to, a lot of it is just because it was told to us at a very young age.
And some of it is.
Think of the politics of high school kids, right? A lot of their politics, they're either parroting their parents or they're doing the same, the opposite.
That's true. And culture does play a role. But after struggling the last 8 years to understand something that I should have gotten 30 years ago, but, you know, I'm a slow learner. I don't want to believe the truth, I think, in the end, is that we're all individual souls. And there's a certain sort of difference between some people, some of us are very concrete, and some of us are very kind of not so concrete. And there's the male principle and female principle. So it's a combination of your soul's comfort with non-concrete issues, or seeing beyond the immediate physical, who you are as an individual and how you interpret the world. Because, you know, you take five kids in a family, they do the same thing. They come out different.
Yeah, right.
They're different in utero. In fact, you talk to the mothers. So there's something that comes. And there's these groups glom together because they have common in common. So there's this group of people is very common, this group is very common. People take it this way, as people take it that way. It is what it is.
So it's kind of like us versus them. Like on Facebook, I'm friends with a lot of anti-vaxxers, right? Mm-hmm. And if somebody who's pro-vaccine posts something, I mean, they attack them. Right. And conversely, if you're at a pro-vaccine forum and you post something that's anti-vax, they attack you. It's just us versus them.
Right? Well, it's the immune system. It's a threatening to the identity, the need to have a surety. So, because if I believe that what I'm doing is bad, how do I deal with that? I would think I would not want to have to face that, so I'm going to shut your ass right now. Whatever that might be, right? I mean, I think that if I look at the immune system, I'm learning more about, you know, I hated learning about the immune system in college and medical school, but now it's really gotten quite interesting because the immune system is a direct expression of the same things that happens out here. But in the outer world, the same as in the inner world. We can go that another time. It's a big discussion. But it's a learning, and you can see it. It's all the same. We have to kind of look at us and say, well, what am I coming from? The first place to look is within.
Do some introspection.
Observation. Be willing to ask the question, why am I reacting to that? And somebody, it's kind of in my office. Somebody was in yesterday, and I forget where it was. where it's all one now, you know. And they were just strongly reactive. And I said, well, why are you reacting so strongly to this? I don't know. I get that you don't know. I understand that. But what's up? It's something. We got to a place about it. Sometimes you can't get to the absolute root. It takes time. There's all kinds of reasons. It's not quite that simple. But why? I mean, there's truth to the value of vaccine. There's truths. There's truths to some of the problems of vaccine. If you're in a relationship with your significant other, do you just toss their views out offhanded because it doesn't match yours, because you're right?
You're going to have a tough relationship if you...
You won't have a relationship very long. Okay? It will be ugly the whole time you're together. Well, we're all together on the boat. But, you know, we're teenagers and you have to be in the right team and wear the right colors and wear the right school. I mean, it's that same mentality. Some people don't get out of that mentality. That's why it exists the way that it exists. I was in school. I was in fraternities. You know.
Well, it's like tribalism. We like to kind of surround ourselves with the people with the same ideologies. 100%. 100%. Socioeconomic
and tribalism level. Is about identity. Yeah. And that's that whole thing. It's our immune system's about identity. So if we want to know immigration, we should look at how our body handles the gut. What do we let in? What do we not let in? How do we let it in? What do we do if it gets in? We can be guided by... Guidance is everywhere once we open up to what's there before us. But if we have to believe something in the face of stuff that says that may not be exactly that way, and to... If, like the, you know, the guys who said, you know, speakers and stuff, but no, God still spoke there, right? You know, we're not going to let go of that. That's my observation. And so it's very hard. I have good friends, very thoughtful friends. But because my spaces are bigger than theirs, if I start a conversation, they don't want to get a conversation with me because I'll just start moving it down a road and I'll get nervous. I don't want to go there. It makes me nervous. That's one person. Another person says, this ridicules me. These are friends of 40 years. That's not about me. It's about them. Hmm. But they're not willing to fight. They are not willing to look at the reactions about it. It's more convenient to make fun of me or, you know. They respect me, but, you know, got weird views, you know, about that kind of stuff. So I think that we have to kind of just see this. Accept that truth. If you're talking to your kids... Have you got teenagers? I think yes.
No, my oldest is 6.
Right. Wait till they get to be 12. You can't talk to them like kids anymore. You can't set boundaries the same.
Yeah.
It's a new conversation. They're young adults. You want to have a healthy relationship with your kids? You have to treat them as adults. Have respectful conversation. Mm. You do have to present your wisdom as the boundaries to protect them. But it's how you present it. It's the envelope. It's where you come from inside of you that makes a difference. That's what matters. Respect them. I hear you. I think that's true. But, you know, I can't let you go out tonight because you're sick and I know you'll stay up all day. No, I'll go to bed. No, I know you won't. No, I won't. No. I'm sorry. God gave me a job. I do the best I can. And I'm sorry. I don't make it because you have... I don't say you're stupid, you're foolish. I'm just saying, this is what I believe. I'm a doctor. I had that to fall back on.
You can always fall back on that. You got the pedigree.
Right. I know sick when I see it, you know what I mean? And their mother was a nurse, so it's a nurse, so you know, it's easy to have to do that. But I always presented it that way. It's not because you're a problem. It's because this is what I believe to be correct for you. You can change that when you get older. Or we find a compromise. Mm. You know what I'm saying? We have to look within and ask ourselves, what am I afraid of?
It is very profound, and I think, including myself, I think there are a lot of people who don't want to do that. It's just easier not to, or are you self-medicating?
And we're not trained to.
You know?
We've been made to believe it's horrible in there. There's demons. The devil's there.
Going back to religion and superstition.
But that's the primitive view.
Okay, Dr. Cohen, let's do some of the get-to-know-you questions.
All right, Dr. Cohen, I think you'll like some of these rapid-fire questions, because you tend to have the quick wit here.
Okay.
What was your favorite band in the 70s between these three, if you had to choose? Casey and the Sunshine Band, Grateful Dead, or Fleetwood Mac?
Somewhere between Grateful Dead and Fleetwood Mac. Yeah. KC. I mean, they had a good song, but come on, they're bubblegum.
We could do like genres, like punk, disco.
Neither of those.
Soft rock, like the Carpenters.
I didn't even get into the Rolling Stones until I happened to be loaded in a class in college. Oh my God, you can't always get what you want. And I got it. Now I'm a fanatic Rolling Stones. I have a great story about the Rolling Stones too. If we ever do this again.
Yeah, yeah, we'll talk about
Rolling
it.
Story. Right. Yeah, I would say, no, I was.
So Grateful Dead.
I was Moody Blues and, you know, a little Chicago.
Eagles.
Eagles. Crosby, Stills, and Nash. I wasn't acid rock, so you'd think I would have been, but I wasn't. Spirit had a great song. I Got a Light on You. I listened to that one about 42 times in a row one night. And then that's my kind of stuff. You know, Beatles for sure.
Yeah, you like the Beatles. Yeah. So see, I was born in 74, so 70s music wasn't that keen for me. But my mom liked ABBA, so I listened to a lot of ABBA. And I liked classic rock, you know, like Queen and the Eagles. Zeppelin.
Yeah, Zeppelin's great too. Again, Zeppelin also, I've only recently got back into Zeppelin.
Oh, they're great.
Unbelievable. Yeah. Oh, I'm totally there. And you know what got me back was a movie called Oblivion with
Tom Cruise.
Tom Cruise. And he plays, and he gets to a space and he puts the thing on the record. It's a Led Zeppelin song.
Huh.
Dun, 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 dun. I went, that's a gorgeous song. Let me find that. Yeah. And all of a sudden, I'm plowing through Led Zeppelin. It's a quick story. I was collecting music for a while. And it just so happened. It's an interesting story. I got a massive 44 gig collection of classic rock. All the Beatles, all the Led Zeppelin, all of them. And I have them all on a hard drive. So I have a collection on my iPod that I have in my car that I listen to. You can get most of them on Spotify now, but
I think that takes away from the enjoyment of music. Because back in the day, you could thumb through your record collection
right?
And it's nice you can look at the art. And now it's just like you pull it up on the phone. I can get anything. I think it takes away from.
Yeah, the art was great during the '60s.
Yeah, it was. Right, you could look at the big ones.
Yeah, right.
All right. So
in the shop.
What's your favorite alcoholic beverage? You're going to say I'm a Mormon. I don't drink.
No. I like Scotch. I like it single and legal.
Okay.
You know what that means?
No.
Well,
legal. I'm not a big drinker. I don't know much about
it. What does legal mean? 18 or older.
Okay.
And single, it's a single malt scotch. Okay. But I get legal and single.
I have problems drinking hard liquor, so I go with wine and really like something like Merlot. Something that's like, or not Merlot, I would say maybe like Malbec. Something that's like really, I think Malbec is really hard to drink.
I can't, Merlot makes my mouth pucker.
See, I can only drink like the red wines, but I'm not a big drinker. But if I don't like beer. I think people only drink beer because it gets you drunk. Because I think the taste of beer is pretty disgusting. But that's just me.
You had a chance to. There's some really good. I hear you. There's some. You just try the wheat beers. Hoegaarden. It's a great tasting. The other thing about beer is you got to be hotter than the devil, sweating, and that beer is ice cold. And then even a Corona tastes absolutely magnificent. No, Negro Modelo. I love it. Superior. I have a whole.
Oh, the Mexican beers. You like the Mexican beers?
I lived on a beach in Mexico for a month. We drank every beer. We got a new case of beer down there.
One of my colleagues at school he makes his own homemade mead and cider.
Oh, mead, yeah.
From home,
I like that too.
He's old school about that.
Yeah, that's good. So I'm not a big beer drinker. But if I'm going to drink something, scotch is good. Like a little bit of ice to open it up a little bit.
What about wine, though, if you had to drink a glass of wine?
Well, the truth is, I like those sweet little fruity things like Moscatos. But if I'm going to have an adult wine, I'll have probably a Cab.
Okay.
Or Shiraz.
Okay.
I even like a Zinfandel, but I know that's heresy to the wine
drinker. See, I'm not a big wine aficionado. I don't know about the heresy.
Because people said, you drink Zinfandel? Is there something wrong with Zinfandel? I like Zinfandel. I don't know. You know, what do you say?
See, I have no palate. Like when Kate and I go somewhere and we get wine and they give you a little sample. Thing. I let Kate do it because I have no palate. To me, it all tastes the same.
Yeah, I
can't even tell the difference.
Yeah,
she does that. All right.
So you can drink that $3 cup.
That's what the Trader Joe's.
You won't even care, right?
Let's talk about favorite country to visit. Like, how about this? Like, if you had to move to a country, live the rest of your days. And not worry about like the money or taxation or just like a place that you find to be bliss.
I haven't traveled a lot. I've traveled Canada, a little bit of southern Canada. I've been down to, you know, northern Mexico and coast, you know, Honduras and Guatemala. I have a whole story of working down there in an international disaster. Nice places. It's hard to say in America. You know, America's quite.
Well, what about state then? Let's pick a state then. What's your favorite state to retire?
I think about Colorado probably. Mm. If Northern California was on the fault line, I'd probably go there. You know, I think Seattle, Washington State. Yeah. I'm a little worried about the reactivity from Japan because it's there.
The Fukushima stuff.
Oh, it's ongoing. Yeah. That they have poisoned the world. Hmm. That's just how that's going to go.
Well, that a lot of people think that's being suppressed. Like, that's a great conspiracy.
Oh, there's no question. But
if you tell a lot of people, they're like, "What? That's not true."
You know, but that all everybody's not telling us all the bit. We're little children. We can't handle the truth.
I was in Washington State like 2 weeks ago. We went to British Columbia and up there in Seattle. It's just gorgeous. I mean, combination of the water.
That
mountains.
To me, I think that's the area that I would choose to live in.
Yeah,
fish, great weather, credible trees, wonderful climate, good people. Yeah. You know, I mean, yeah. I mean, the truth is, I also love the hill country of Texas.
Texas is great. I tell people, it's like, if you can endure the summer is like everybody else's winter. If you can endure the summer, the rest of the year's bliss. I know like Kate's from Utah, so she always laments how there's no seasons here because they have seasons over there.
Yeah.
It's true.
We do.
2 weeks of fall.
No, if it changes color, come on, get a grip. Lower your expectations.
Lower expectations. Exactly.
I mean, what do you want? You know, New England?
Well, yeah.
I get it. You know what I mean? But then you got to live in New England and freeze your little...
In the winter, exactly.
Exactly. I lived in Chicago for 3 years. I was like, God, I love... If I had to be in a big city, Chicago would be the big city. But if I had money, I'd live in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. I love Chicago. It's clean. It's neat. I love it. It's great stuff. But if I was going to live in a city...
That makes sense. It's
a
big
village,
apple.
Manhattan's a village.
I honestly haven't been there since 1983 when I was 9.
Oh, you should go.
I need to
Times
go back.
Times Square is like complete. It's like completely transformed.
Right. It's all cleaned up. It's all corporate now.
It's unbelievable there.
Yeah. No more prostitutes.
Well, I don't know. I can't answer that. Maybe wearing new outfits. But have you seen this thing where these people who are naked and body painted are walking around?
Yeah.
I mean, I was just there. My son lives in New Jersey, right over the bridge. Bridgegate Bridge. And... So I go in. Whenever I go there, I go into Manhattan. I have to have my Manhattan walk for 2.5 hours or 3 hours. And I always go to Times Square, Central Park. I used to have an office in Manhattan. So sometimes I have a memory of doing all that.
So much better than L.A., right?
Oh, my God.
Yeah, the Manhattanites had L.A.
Over L.A.?
It's like polarizing.
It's
right?
Like Dante's Inferno versus Heaven. What are you talking about? Have you been to traffic in L.A.? Oh, my God. My parents live in Long Beach. And I was in L.A. doing that psychiatric rotation when I met with John Lilly thing. And I would get on the... I mean, it would come to a nonstop. I would just lean my chair back in my car, turn the air conditioning on, imbibe whatever the appropriate imbibition drug was in my car, and hang out there listening to rock till the traffic moved. Oh, my God.
But what about the perfect climate?
Throw me in hell.
What about that? People love Southern California because it's the perfect climate.
San Diego would be a great place to live. Again, you know, I mean, San Diego is going to drop off the face of the earth pretty soon. but San Diego's got great weather.
Do they have a winter there?
A winter?
Yeah.
Yeah, it gets cold.
Yeah. Like Texas cold or not as cold?
Yeah, I would say they're kind of comparable. Sometimes colder, sometimes.
See, I couldn't live in Hawaii because there's no seasons. I need to have Christmas to be at least cold and not 85 degrees.
Well, fly back to New York and enjoy Christmas. What is the problem? Go to spend 3 weeks in Minnesota and get it out of your system.
No, that's okay.
You know what I mean?
I used to live in Alaska and tell you that.
Oh, there you go. You know.
Yeah. It's cold. I don't miss the 45 below.
Yeah, it's like. God almighty, you know? I moved to Iceland. At least they have hot springs there. You
right,
know
right,
I mean?
Right. Yeah, that's nice over there. All right. Well, Dr. Cohen, it was an honor for you to be on Naturopathic Earth Radio. Hopefully you'll come back another time.
You invite me, I'll come.
All right. Take care. Thank you. All right. So that was Dr. Cohen here with the second half of our interview. I love it how he calls me out for being a cynic. I think that's so great. I have no problem with that at all because I am a cynic. If you can't tell by the dozens of podcasts that we've done and then with the confessions, that I do tend to have a cynical view. And maybe that was formed partly from my upbringing as an obese child who was ridiculed and insulted. And so I just kind of see the worst in mankind, or maybe I'm dead on. Maybe the FDA and the CDC and the World Health Organization are just corrupt to the core and they're just trying to cover it all up. Who knows? But I do wear the tinfoil hat, as Dr. Cohen does says, to a certain extent. I mean, I don't think we're lizard people, or I don't think the New World Order and Prince William and they're all lizard people. But True. I mean, I do tend to have a little more conspiratorial view. I do want to mention Dr. Cohen's website. It's the Center for Complementary Medicine, and you can find it over at complamed.net. So that's complamed.net. So complamed. And definitely check out his website and contact him. He is very eager. If you have any questions, if you want to get to know more about complementary medicine and all of its branches, please feel free to contact him. He would absolutely have no problem with it. If you want more information on the services that he offers there, contact him. Even if you don't live in South Texas, he would greatly appreciate it. Dr. Cohen is totally somebody that I could see on a PBS show, like something like Charlie Rose. I could totally see him on the like Charlie Rose show, because the thing is that, I mean, and a lot of our talk was, of course, off air, and the man's breadth of knowledge is incredible. It's mind-boggling, and he would do so well like on a talk show where he could just go off topic and talk about whatever it is, because he's brilliant. The man, I mean, honestly, he should have his own podcast. And Dr. C, I know you're probably listening to this, start your own podcast, because I mean, you have decades of knowledge and great stories and people that you've, famous people that you've interacted with. And I just think you are definitely, definitely meant to have a podcast. So in the future, we will be interviewing other people from the alternative medicine field. Until then, continue listening to NP Radio. I will publish some podcasts coming up about other things that are lurking, that are dangerous, as well as some more uplifting things. Until next time, be good to each other and take care. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to Naturopathic Earth Radio. Visit us at www.naturopathicearth.com. Follow us on Twitter at Naturopath Earth and subscribe to us on iTunes. Don't forget to leave a review. And remember our core belief at naturopathicearth.com. Let food be thy medicine, let nature be thy healer. See you next time. Music courtesy of Art of Escapism.